Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is T. Jefferson Parker. He's a New York Times bestselling author, and he's out with his brand new novel, The Last Good Guy. This novel's available wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Putnam, and this is the continuation of P.I. Roland Ford, who's hired by a client to find her missing sister. And as everything with goes with PIs, nothing is what it seems. And this is just an absolute great adventure in Southern California. Jeff, the whole idea of Roland Ford here with a PI, it seems like this is true of every PI, maybe even every lawyer and everybody that we even talk to. You can't always trust the person hiring you to do a job. Can you kind of explain what Roland Ford is up against, not only trying to find a missing girl, but not necessarily trusting his client?
Yeah, I sure can, Brian. You know, Roland's he's a good, attentive, serious PI, and the woman who hires him on the first page of the book to find her little sister is kind of alluring, intelligent, a little evasive, and she weaves this kind of incredible tale to Roland about what is, you know, likely happened. And the more Roland peels back the layers of her and gets to know her and vets her stories, the less and less of this woman he believes. So she is apparently kind of deceitful at first, and Roland does not know what to make of her or her kind of outlandish claims.
It would seem that maybe somebody outside the industry would see that and say, well, if a PI is going to have a client that lies to him, just get rid of the client. But this is kind of true for most clients. You never can trust fully what they tell you, right?
Yeah, and he likes the client, and the client is in great distress, and if the client is telling the truth, or even partly the truth, what is happening before Roland's very eyes as the story goes on is pretty dire. So his heart remains in the right place, even though his mind is skeptical about this woman and what she's telling him.
This book takes place in Southern California, and, you know, it's Fallbrook, it's Orange County area. Can you kind of explain, because I love reading about these different areas, Fallbrook, how far removed is it from Los Angeles, both geographically and culturally?
Well, hugely from L.A., for sure. Physically, Fallbrook lies between San Diego and Los Angeles, kind of midway. And but, you know, culturally, it's a world apart from Los Angeles, certainly. It's a rural little place that I live in, Fallbrook, with 37,000 people. We consider ourselves to be the avocado capital of the world, and we take that very seriously. A lot of citrus is grown here, avocados, of course, flowers, commercial nurseries. It's a fragrant, beautiful, kind of bucolic little place, inland from the ocean, about 15 miles, agricultural in history, and conservative, easygoing, a private place. People respect your privacy, and it's a tight knit, nice little American small town. It's terrific.
Well, and even Roland Ford talks fondly about the avocado festival, so I can almost have this idea of Roland Ford just enjoying where he lives because it fits his lifestyle, which it seems to fit you like a glove as well.
Yeah, it does. I always, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I always find myself writing about where I live. You know, I grew up in Orange County, and my first several novels were set in Orange County, and then I kind of drifted south to San Diego about 20 years ago, and the books became centered around Fallbrook and San Diego and all. And I really enjoy writing about where I live. I feel vested in whatever little city that I live in, Laguna Beach for a long time, Newport Beach, and I draw my material and inspiration from the world right literally outside my window. And I think that's a really relevant and fun way to live and to write.
I'm sure the PI novels that you grew up reading and have read in your early adulthood differ from the PI novels of today. And by that I mean, in this book you have a missing little girl, Daily Rideout, and technology plays a role in a lot of this, finding missing children. So it's kind of funny to watch how the whole genre of these PI detective novels have changed, because now when you search for a missing child, it's not like it was 50 years ago when, you know, you had a Raymond Chandler novel doing it. Now you can look at digital recordings, you can look at the internet footprints and that type of thing. How's that kind of changed your writing? Because this is an era you didn't grow up in as a teenager.
Yeah, that's very true. It has changed a ton. You know, the whole, our whole world and everything around it, you know, in those 50 years, if you want to say, is so topsy-turvy. And yeah, so you, as a writer, if you're going to write a PI, you know, story, series, you sort of need to keep up with that stuff. And so I talk to PIs and I talk to police and FBI, all sorts of guys, and kind of see, you know, what they're doing and how they're doing it. And yeah, Roland does as much work from his computer now as he does the old-fashioned way, you know, following people in your car or trailing them down the avenue or whatever it might be. It's a different world for those guys. And, you know, also because of social media, the last even, say, just by 10 years, people now seem to be so eager to be found, almost. You know, they promote themselves, and they're out there, and they're public in this weird sort of online way. And so Roland can tap into all that and find out things about people that we never would have been able to find out just, say, 10, 15 years ago.
Well, it is kind of funny, too, how we've trained ourselves to think about these teenagers on social media, because I know invariably when you see a teenager go missing, the thing they'll say is she hasn't posted to Facebook or Snapchat in, you know, 72 hours and nobody's heard from her on her phone. If she was sitting in her living room, you would love to have a kid that wasn't posting on Facebook or Snapchat for 72 hours, but the fact that they're missing, all of a sudden now that becomes a bad thing. So it's kind of a two-edged sword, right?
Yeah, it is. That's a funny statement, and it's true. It's true. And Roland is confounded by this whole thing because the missing girl Daly is talented. She runs away from home apparently with her, you know, a few belongings, clothes she likes, a backpack, and her Martin backpacker guitar, which she loves. And she's a talented girl, and he really kind of begins to have, you know, great affection for her, having never seen her, never met her, and just trying to track her down through all these kind of strange people that seem to have some kind of a hold on Daly. And poor Roland's trying to figure out what it is, and he is very aware that a 14-year-old can be bright and witty and independent and wild, and also really, really, really vulnerable and really, really easy to manipulate. So he's aware of both all those things at the same time.
I'm talking with T. Jefferson Parker about his brand new novel, The Last Good Guy. It's the latest Roland Ford novel, that great PI series that Jeff has entertained us with over the years. Jeff, the Irregulars appear in the book again here, and for the people who may not have read a Roland Ford novel yet, take me through the Irregulars, because that almost seems like a Lake Wobegon type of personalities set in Southern California.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but there is some similarity. Roland lives on a big rolling kind of estate that he inherited from his wife's family upon her death. And part of the estate are six casitas that line a spring-fed lake. And Roland rents them out. He lives alone there now. He's a widower, and he has an office there in the home. And he rents out these six casitas that are around the lake because he's kind of lonely, and two, he doesn't mind having the income. So this cast of characters, he calls them the Irregulars because he purposefully rents to kind of odd, unusual, interesting people. And so he has this little coterie, if you will, who rent from him, and they socialize together and they kind of keep watch each other's backs a little bit, and the Irregulars are they're kind of a chorus. They kind of keep an eye on Roland, and they know what he's doing to a point, and they try to give him guidance and help, and sometimes they're very helpful and really do help Roland accomplish things, and other times they're just in the way and misinterpreting him and calling him down for things that he's not really responsible for. So it's this group, and they're entertaining, and they also help Roland do things. They're sort of functional. They're sort of his loose team, if you will, especially one of them, Bert. It sort of becomes Roland's foil and Roland's sidekick at times. Bert's a very mysterious guy, but he's good at a lot of different things.
I know we talked about how Orange County makes it's an appearance as a character here, just the background, but the Pacific Ocean as well. I have this romantic idea of the Pacific Ocean, and mine is something akin to the Shawshank Redemption when Andy Dufresne is traveling along the Pacific and, you know, Morgan Freeman narrates it that it has no memory. But Pacific Ocean for Roland Ford takes on a different meaning because it's not beautiful to him, right?
No, it isn't. It's scary and icy and deathly to him. That's where his beloved wife dies in a small plane crash. Her plane crashes into the Pacific. So the Pacific is not Pacific to Roland at all. It's dreadful, and it's kind of scary, and He can't look at that thing without remembering her and you know what happened to her and you know he's a war vet too of Fallujah. He was in First Fallujah and one of the things that Roland liked to do before he went to war was to surf. And for some reason during the war in his experience at Fallujah, the bloody siege of Roland never surfs again. So now he looks at that Pacific and he thinks of his wife and he thinks of what it used to be like to ride those waves, and I think I'm going to get him back into the water here before too long because he's got to be friendlier with the Pacific. I think he's missing out on too much.
And then he even has in his own mind this commentary on just real estate in California. He talks about homes that look Italian, and he wonders if people in Italy have homes that look like they could be in California. What's his thought process there?
I see so many. Sort of Italianate mini mansions built in Southern California. It's a very popular style of architecture, and the way it seems to go, and especially in these small ritzy coastal towns like Laguna Beach, where I spent a lot of time, for example, or Newport Beach, the little sort of beachy houses will get torn down over time, and in their place, taking up the entire lot, will be an Italian looking sort of like a villa, say, and it's a strange thing that looks like it, should have come from the hills of Tuscany is now sitting along Coast Highway in Newport Beach, and it's just kind of amusing. And so Roland is aware of that, and it's a way of noting our Southern Californian foibles and our desires for the exotic and the extravagant and the impressive, maybe.
The other part of this book that I found incredibly interesting was some of it takes place at a location called the Paradise Date Farm. And when I first heard the name, it had one meaning for me. As I read on, it had a different meaning for me. But dates in Southern California, the fruit, I can't remember ever eating a date. Who eats dates?
Yeah, good question. I don't know. I don't. I don't even see them in the market really much. I mean, I don't know. Middle Easterners eat dates, of course. It figures into the book. Who's eating them and who's growing them and harvesting them and all that stuff. But yeah, dates aren't much on the menu anymore that I'm aware of.
And then the other thing that was interesting in this is Roland takes risks as a PI, but he's not a soldier, he's not a cop, so it's a different type of risk taking. So what's in it for him? Where's his skin in the game other than money?
Well. It goes beyond money. Certainly, Roland wants to be of aid to people who need it. He's empathetic. I mean, his heart literally does go out to Penelope in the first scene when he realizes how much, potential danger her little sister might be in. Roland specializes. He's a locator. Is really what he does best in the world of PIing. He's not a divorce guy or a sneak around, take pictures kind of guy. He finds missing people, and he's good at it because he has an underlying search mechanism in his own heart because he lost his wife, and he knows that he'll never find her again. She's crashed into the Pacific. She's gone. But that yearning for someone or something that you've felt, someone you've known that you can't attain, that eats at him, and that makes him... That propels him into working hard and taking risks and investing himself deeply in the people and the cases that he accepts to do work on.
Seems like most of the PIs I read about in fiction are either single or they're divorced or they're widowed, that type of thing. As you research and talk to PIs, is that the case? Because it seems like it's really a single man's game.
I the PIs I know are married. Family men, most of them. I think it's more a literary device than anything. When you have a character, of course, who's widowed or a widower, or single, man or woman, whatever. You then have the entire world of connection and romance and search. For that certain person, out there. It's part of the book in a way that writing about a family man. Family woman, it's not there so much, and I like that. That romantic search and that yearning yearning for a mate is strong, and it plays big in our lives. And I like to be able to address it in the books.
All right. Well, this book was nothing short of fantastic. It's called The Last Good Guy. It's the latest Roland Ford novel, that great PI in Southern California. It's by T. Jefferson Parker. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Putnam. Jeff, just another great, entertaining book. I loved it, and thanks for joining me to talk about it.
Thank you. Anytime, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.